Aloha and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Catherine Cruz. It is a drive to make with your windows down to breathe in the fragrance of the blooming ginger. The stunning cityscapes just minutes from town are a magnet for cyclists, motorbikers, and yes, even drifters. Hikers love the trails, and those fortunate to live on the hilltop choose to seek the solace of the forest enclave. But the corridor is wearing down. The hardscapes, the roads, and the softscapes, the trees and the greenery, cry out for attention. Enter the proposed plan to manage this resource. Joining us this morning in studio, Perry White. He's with Planning Solutions, the company hired to draft the management plan. Landon Johnson is a planner with the Department of Land and Natural Resources, a forestry division, which paid for the study. And Mark Bernstein is the president of the Tantalus Community Association and a member of the advisory committee. Welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you
very much. Now, we're talking about this draft plan that's going to be the subject of a public meeting. And Landon, why don't we start out with you? You know, what are the particulars about that meeting? Well, you know, where is it? What time?
Yes. So the public meeting for the draft Tantalus Roundtop Corridor Management Plan will be tomorrow, Wednesday, May 8th, from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Department of Land and Natural Resources boardroom. So it's going to be kind of an open discussion format. So we'd like to invite the public to come and share ideas, talk with the planners and elected officials and agency representatives that helped develop this plan.
And Perry, talk about, I guess, you know, how this plan got crafted and what's the, I guess, the bird's eye view, the big picture.
Well, you know, in some ways, it's sort of the classic thing. We started off trying to get agreement on what the vision for the corridor was, and then what the goals and objectives of the plan, any plan that might arise from that out. We then took a look, once we had done that, and there was a lot of consultation that went into that. We didn't just do it all on our own. We then took a look at what are the resources in the corridor that we could use, that we need to draw on, and what are the management issues? And again, we spent a lot of time, I mean, days and days sort of with our own eyes, but we also used the community's eyes. We also set up a website so that people from afar who had been up there, had observations they wanted to make, could chime in. So we tried to sort of spend a fair amount of time just talking and listening. We obviously had some preconceptions about what the issues were, but we also wanted to make sure that we didn't sort of lock out things we hadn't thought of on our own.
And the advisory committee, you know, brought together these different groups and different entities because the city and county is a key player in all of this, too.
Absolutely. The city and county is very much a key player. So what you have is a situation where you have a city and county-owned roadway that runs largely through state-owned land with private property adjacent to it or served by it. So you have this confluence of interests that are a little bit, more than a little bit. They're quite atypical. Usually you don't have that kind of a mixture. So there were a lot of challenges, but it also created a lot of opportunities because there were different kinds of partners. The challenge, of course, was to get everybody talking to one another and to get people thinking beyond the, if I say I'm interested, I might have to pay for it and I'm not sure I can pay for it, kind of thing. So we tried to structure it so that's why the issues are first. So forget about, you know, how we're going to solve the problem. Just let's come to some agreement about what people are worried about, what they want to see addressed.
And I know, Mark, in the headlines, I think the most recent thing that we saw was a triathlete who was up there training and I believe was hit by a drifter, someone who may have been racing. And that's been a long-standing problem up on that hill.
It has been for many, many years between drifters, skateboarders. It also highlights how many people use the corridor and the different things they use it for. You have the recreational driver, the classic Sunday driver. You have the racer who thinks that this is about the best thing they could ever race on. And those racers are both cars as well as motorcycles who love the opportunity now with social media to have videos of them racing around corners, which they can then immediately post onto the internet to their various groups. So you have people using this incredible resource that have very different needs and create very different potential dangers to everybody. We have our, a state offering everybody Tantalus as a resource that they should go and look at because it is quite beautiful. We have a very much underused, incredible state park up there. A 10-mile drive, similar to the 17-mile drive up in California. So everybody has an interest in this property. Everybody wants to use this property. And yet, a lot of people don't realize that this is the property from which they get the water that they drink.
Right, the watershed. Very important, right, Landon? I mean, that's part of DLNR's mission, is to protect the resource.
Oh, absolutely. So this is in the Honolulu Watershed Forest Reserve, and yeah, it is quite unique to have a community in the conservation district in a forest reserve. But yes, our mission is to help manage and protect the watershed resources.
Right. So that's why you folks decided that, yeah, this was important. I understand that the community really, after years of decades of frustration, I should say, helped to spark this.
Yes, we wanted and sought assistance from our legislators to fund a plan because we had this really quite incredible resource and it was being managed or not managed in a catch-as-catch-can basis as opposed to a systematic basis. And to be able to intelligently discuss managing it correctly, you first need to go out and say, what are the issues? Who owns what? Who's responsible for what? What does the public want to see from the corridor, which is in no small part what tomorrow's meeting is about, is to come and engage with the people who were involved in the creation of the study so that you can give them your thoughts that you haven't put on the website or haven't written, and to also ask questions, you know, the hard questions of what it's going to cost. How are we going to go about doing this? Is this just going to be another plan that winds up on some shelf that somebody digs out in 25 years and says this is incredibly interesting?
Right, but hopefully not, right, Perry? I mean, this is the first time you've had some hard numbers as far as what might be necessary from the state's part for CIP projects to the city's part on paving the roads.
Yeah, and I want to keep both CIP, the capital improvement projects, in there, and also the O&M, the operation and maintenance, because they are both integrated and both essential. So you can fix it up, but if you don't maintain it, it degrades. And that's really what's happened. If you look at the history of the roadway, the first little bit of roadway went up Tantalus in the kingdom days. It got paved during the territorial days. It was last significantly worked on the 50s, which is now, I hate to say it, but 70 years ago. And since that time, it's just been a patchwork. And so that's the asphalt, the road itself. And then there's the side of the road, okay, because you've got shoulders and you've got vegetation, which has over the years really grown up. I mean, anybody who's seen pictures of Round Top Tantalus from the early, mid-1800s, saw that much of it was denuded. There were animals grazing on it. They had eaten the native plants. So the early part of the 20th century was a big reforestation, regrowth effort, but a lot of invasive species sort of got their toehold there. And there was a lot of planting of trees, but they weren't native trees. So we've really transformed Tantalus by our actions over the years. And we have not, we've sort of let nature take its course. And we need to give nature a little help right now.
Okay, and we do have a call on the line. Michelle from Honolulu, you have a comment or a question?
More of a comment. I used to live on Puawaina Drive, so I used to go up there rather frequently in my car, and then eventually I got a motorcycle, and my friends, I rode with an all-women's motorcycle group, and we would go up there maybe once every couple of months. But then things kind of sketchy started happening up there, and we quit going. One thing was that we heard about residents who were angry at people going up there and were doing things like throwing nails or bottles on the road to create broken glass so that to discourage motorcyclists and other people. So we quit going up there. And I do love the park up there. It is absolutely gorgeous. But since I moved to Kaneohe over 22 years ago, I just haven't been up there since. And it's mainly been because of the negative press. So anyway, that's my comment, and I'll get off the air now. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Michelle. And you know, it's not that problem is not isolated to Tantalus if that happens. I've heard it happening in Waimanalo where, you know, folks get protective and then they're like, okay, I'm going to put, you know, nails out because I don't like the cyclists coming back here. So, how do you deal with things like that?
Well, I don't know how much of the stories have any facts behind them, but the reality is that if someone comes driving past your front door on Sunday morning at 7 a.m. On either a motorcycle or in a car that makes an incredible amount of noise, it should not surprise anyone if the reaction of that person who lives in the house is not positive towards the person racing through their neighborhood. And yet at the same time, this person who was in the motorcycle group that I was quite aware of, because I've been up there for a very long time, they have the same rights. They have the right to ride their motorcycles up there. People who, you know, ride their cars, they have the right to ride their cars up there. Now, you know, they do need to obey the basic traffic laws, because the reality of Tantalus is we have a road where there are a number of places where there is not enough space on the road for two cars and two people to pass at the same time. And therefore, those factors will come together at one time at some point in time. It's not an if. It's a when.
And there is a section of the road, the old carriage road, I think, right? They talked about, I mean, those carriage days.
Well, there's Hogsback. We call it the Hogsback, which is a single lane road with a retaining wall, which is actually at serious risk of falling apart. And that's one of the items that is in the planned budget to be repaired over the next 18 months or so. And hopefully that will go forward, along with a number of other hot-button issues, where the issue is not potholes, but instead the actual integrity of the road, so we don't have a reoccurrence of things such as what happened during our, you know, apocryphal 40 days and 40 nights of rain. And so we get to things ahead of time, even if that may not be the most financially efficient way to do things. I mean, it would be nice to have all of the money in the world and no restrictions of any kind and all the time in the world, but we don't have either of those.
Right, and for our listeners, you may not remember the 40 days and 40 nights of rain. There was a terrible landslide, which really closed off the roadway, I think, for about a year at least.
Yeah, more than a year.
More than a year.
Yeah, so that was a very scary situation. Fortunately, no one got hurt, but it was very dangerous.
Yes. I'd like to go back just for a moment to the caller's. So I'll talk about the core of the caller's comments, which was like, we don't want you up here, and people putting on nails. I lived up there for 20 years. My wife and I still walk up there two or three times a month. We are now old enough so that most of our walking is on the road rather than on the trails, but it's always been all over. And I have never seen that kind of stuff around there. So my first comment would be, come back. You know, enjoy the resource. I think you'll be amazed by how much beauty is still there. And I think that you will find that the residents, and I'm not saying there's never an exception, but the residents are very welcoming of people in there. Although they prefer you don't be on a loud motorcycle at 6 a.m.
Just be courteous. Yeah. Be courteous. All right. Well, if you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about managing the Tantalus Roundtop Drive area. So we're sitting down with guest Perry White of Planning Solutions, the company that was hired to draft this proposed management plan. Landon Johnson is a planner with DLNR's Forestry Division, and Mark Bernstein is the president of the Tantalus Community Association. And Landon, let's talk about the state's part in all this, because you've got the Division of Forestry, but you also have the Parks Department too, right? Because you've got the park up there, and you know, a lot of folks want to enjoy that resource.
There is definitely a lot of components that feed into why we're doing this plan, Division of Forestry and Wildlife. So yes, State Parks has a beautiful park up there, and ensuring access to the park via the road is definitely key. While technically that plan is, or that park is outside of our corridor management plan, access to it is included, but also access to all of our hiking trails that go throughout this area, which we have obligation to maintain those trailheads and ensure a high quality of hiking experience for trail users.
I think Glenn is making an important point here, is that this is the corridor management plan. The corridor is the roadway, but the roadway exists for a purpose, and it is to serve the park. It is to serve the trailheads, because you could still get every place on the mountain on the trails if you were willing to walk 20 miles at a at a clip. But because the road is there, you can access the trail system at multiple points on it, and people who would never be able to use it fully if that were not there can. And that's really important. And then, of course, you have the residents. If the road did not continue to exist, the residents who are up there would not be able to get to and from their homes. And the residents actually do a lot of stuff to support sort of the safe use of this area. This is not a Sherwood Forest. This is a place where most people feel pretty comfortable. You still have to watch out for your car getting broken into from somebody going past, but it is by and large a safe place. And if you get into trouble, there are people around who you can go to for help, and that's happened over and over again.
And Landon, I know whenever there's a wind event or a storm, occasionally we'll get a branch blocking the road. So talk about the trees up there, because, you know, there are a lot of trees, and how do you tell when one is, seriously decayed?
Well, that's tough. We would typically hire arborists, somebody to do a hazard tree assessment. But yeah, the fact is a lot of the vegetation up there does need some work, and we would love to have funding to do initial attack of remedial actions, identify hazard trees, and do some management of that. We're definitely limited on funding, like many divisions and agencies. But yeah, it's
a challenge.
It's a concern, but yeah. Yes, we definitely want to try to address safety and access as much as possible.
So,
and the challenge is really talking about the jurisdictions, the city and county, working with the state Department of Land and Natural Resources, and then working with the community, because the Tantalus Community Association has been doing quarterly work days to remove trash that is dumped and to try to maintain the mountain for well over two decades now. And we need to get all of these groups to work together to manage a resource. And, management is not something, and maintenance is not something that gets a lot of praise. It doesn't elect politicians. People like shiny new things. They don't like to pay for polishing shiny new things that have now gotten slightly tarnished.
Okay.
They would rather get something new. And this is all a part of the challenge of managing a resource, and this particular magnificent resource, effectively with the help and contributions of everyone, because it's for everyone.
We did offer a place at the table to the city and county, and also a council member, Carol Fukunaga, who's been working with the community up there. She did say that she's proposed $4.5 to $5 million in the budget this year to tackle some of the most hazardous, I guess, hot spots. But she says that, yeah, long-term solutions are going to require a lot of collaboration with all the parties at the table. And I don't know what DLNR has in the future. You folks spent about $400,000 to commission the study to kind of begin the conversation. But the big question is, what's going to come afterwards, right?
Well, afterwards, anybody hopes for a plan as it doesn't just collect dust. But we can take this, we being DLNR, Division of Forestry and Wildlife, as well as the city and county agencies, as well as Friends of Tantalus, Tantalus Community Association, and you know, put forward requests for funding as identified in the plan, which has been broken down in pretty good detail, sometimes order of magnitude. But to make those requests for whether it's a CIP, or funding for O&M to have, you know, forestry staff go and clear vegetation and so forth.
Okay, we have another call coming in. Sonia from Paoa. What's on your mind?
So I'm also a Pulwana Drive resident. I'm a current resident. So we're where, you know, Tantalus Drive begins after Pulwana ends. So we get everybody spitting out from speeding down Tantalus, and we're the first semi-flat area. So my question, as someone with a small child and who watches people fly past at, you know, 50 on a regular basis, you know, for the management plan, are there plans for speed bumps? Are there plans for increased enforcement in terms of more presence for HPD? Is there more of a presence for DoCare officers? Because, you know, we know this is a problem. So, I mean, what are the solutions to, you know, stopping that behavior? I mean, clearly it's not legal behavior to be flying through a 25 at a 50. You know, we've gone through our neighborhood board. We had two family members on the neighborhood board for years. We've gone to our legislators. We've gone to city and county. We've been working on this for more than a decade, and nothing has happened. You know, for maybe a week, we got one of those flashy speed signs, and that's all that's happened in a decade worth of advocacy, trying to get people to not fly through there. So what are your solutions to that? How is this going to be different in terms of incorporating that into the management plan?
All right. Thank you, Sonia.
Okay.
Who wants to take that, Alan?
Well, Mark, I will. What I'll say to you is this. The issues that you speak of, since I do drive down Pulwana every morning and have for over 40 years, you're correct that people fly down the mountainside and at speeds, well, I wouldn't say 50, but faster than I would be comfortable if I was getting out into my car in the morning. So as far as speed bumps, I was unfortunately forced to become educated on the world of speed bumps, and they are not quite as simple and easy an item to install on roads that have a tremendous amount of rain or a tremendous amount of slope. We were looking into them after the triathlete accident for the same reason, which was to try to do something that would be effective in stopping speeding, drifting, and the rest of it. And it's been a very, very challenging and frustrating process, because the reality is we all know that if we could put four police officers in four cars going around the mountain nonstop all day, that would take care of it. We just can't afford to do it. So we have to look for ways in which we can afford to accomplish what we all know needs to be accomplished, and that's why we also need this private-public partnership.
Okay, well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Today we're talking about proposed plans to manage the Round Top Tantalus community. You can join the discussion, too, by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with journalist Rachel Louise Snyder, author of a new book about domestic violence, and Suzanne DeBuse, who runs a crisis center for victims of domestic violence, including a program designed to identify when a woman is at risk of being murdered and then helping prevent that from happening. DeBuse was abused in her first marriage. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, right after On Point.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, U.S. Senator Cory Booker is an optimist because he knows how far we've already come.
My parents never hesitated to show me the wretchedness, the bigotry, the darkness of American life.
But is raw optimism enough to create the bipartisanship that Booker seeks? That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
This evening at 7, right after Counterspin.
You are back with the conversation, and this is Catherine Cruz. You know, I recall visiting friends up there on Tantalus, and I remember the first time that I saw a group of cyclists coming down the hill, and I was really kind of surprised. I wasn't expecting that, but, you know, everybody, you know, loves that drive, but it does attract a myriad of groups.
It certainly does. Every kind you can imagine are there, from bird watchers, hikers, bicyclists, motorcyclists, Harley riders, ninja riders, drifters, many of who feel that they have been discriminated against because we haven't made a place for them to go racing at 100 miles an hour that would be safe. I'm not sure that such a place exists. But so we have all of these different groups that use, enjoy, love the mountain, pedestrians, bicyclists, and of course our skateboardists who just love the idea of a 5-mile downhill run.
Yes, and I actually talked to somebody who lived up there, who grew up in that area, and who used to skateboard there. So it's not just outsiders coming in, but, you know, people who live up on the mountainside.
Absolutely, it'll be just a matter of the age group,
yes,
of the people growing up as to whether or not you'll see skateboarders coming down.
And then we did have one of our callers email and wanted to say that, just to let folks know that the particular group that this person rode with was never up there in the morning for the reasons given. They kept pipe noise to a minimum and stuck to the speed limit. So this caller said she just wants to break the stereotype of disrespectful bikers, because there are folks who go up there and are courteous.
Oh, absolutely. Especially, you know, our Harley riders who would show up usually midday, mid-afternoon, because Harley riders don't tend to be up at 7 a.m. on Sundays. So they were out. They do make noise, but, you know, if we're going to eliminate noise, we just need to eliminate people, because the people make the noise, and you have to be willing to live with it, because you're going to make some of it at some point in time, you know. And that's just a part, again, of living and managing a resource for everybody and allowing everybody to get something out of it, but also requiring that they give back to it something as well.
And I think that's a really important point you make, Mark, is the knee-jerk reaction to there's a problem is we'll keep the problem out. And Tantalus, I think the magic of Tantalus is that Tantalus welcomes people in. And so the challenge is to allow all of these different kinds of uses, which in the wrong circumstances can be not a pleasant thing to have together, but allow them to take place together by encouraging people to behave appropriately so they can, so that you can have all of these different uses in the same place, taking advantage of this magical middle of the city resource.
Now, I have not been up there recently, and I don't know if you're getting or you're seeing issues with tour vans at all, or, you know, because there's a concern about over tourism. But, you know, Landon, can you talk to that at all? Are there, you know, vans of people going up there?
Well, I've certainly seen plenty of vans going up to the Manoa Lookout Point. But yeah, Perry and Mark, you guys have probably seen it for many years. And
the evening scrum, as we call it, of limousines and tourist vans at the Manoa Lookout is probably our single largest tourist issue. And the reason is you have this very specific narrow area, way too many vehicles up there, all in a compressed time period because they've been told that the sunset is the perfect time. You have many who do not speak English. You have people who are taking photographs of the city. I'm not sure why, because they're taking them with cameras that couldn't possibly get anything out of those photographs. They back up into the roadway and then they hit the flash on their camera. And that happens all the time. And it creates a hazard. Now, the hazard has not resulted in any serious accidents or injuries or deaths, but the reality is if you're driving on Round Top Drive near the Manoa Lookout around sunset time, you're going to see cars that are literally parked in the middle of the roadway.
Right, because you've got that iconic view of Diamond Head. Then you've got the city lights coming on and all the buildings of downtown Honolulu. It's a beautiful sight. It's gorgeous.
It's magnificent. What's so tragic actually about it is the view's actually better from the park. The bathrooms are better in the park. The parking is safer and easier in the park.
Okay, well, everybody's nodding their heads in this room. So I don't know, maybe there needs to be some education and you know, do you drive people to the parks where you have the room and the facilities? I don't know, Landon, what's in the cards?
And that's something that the plan outlines is things that are needed like signage and parking resolution and, you know, capacity for how many cars can we have at this place safely. And what would be a safer turnaround point? But really, signage and outreach, and you know, continuing the effort of collaboration, and hopefully working with whether it's Hawaii Tourism Authority or tour companies. And I'm not sure how to reach all the limousine drivers and Lyft and Uber drivers, but anybody that goes up there to visit. But so the park with a beautiful view is just right around the corner. It's like, check it out.
We do have another call on the line. Todd from Kaka'ako.
Yes, hey. I'm an urban planner with a background in street design, and I was kind of curious if the community and the city and the planning entities have looked at an alternative striping configuration for this roadway, in the sense dropping the center line and having a dashed kind of fog line so that the center roadway lane would be kind of shared by motorized traffic, and so that pedestrians and cyclists could, in a sense, use the new dashed shoulder area, so that as two motorized vehicles approach each other, they would slow down and kind of merge into the striped shoulder area versus the potentially very out of date double yellow line that's currently up there.
Thanks for that. Perry, do you want to take that?
Yeah. Tantalus is so variable in terms of roadway width, conditions, whether it's straight, whether it's curving. And I would say that a lot of people who use that roadway frequently will use the yellow central line as much as an aiming tool as a you cannot cross it line, because the road is simply too narrow. And vegetation management on the side of the road is so spotty that the vegetation's growing out to avoid running into it. You have to move towards the center. It becomes even more challenging under rainy conditions when you can't see that good old yellow line. Now, when the reflectors are there, they really help a lot. But the condition of the roadway is such that the asphalt's deteriorating. Those reflectors no longer stick for very long. So even when somebody does the right thing, goes and puts them in, they're gone pretty soon. So you definitely have an issue with it up there. I haven't ever really looked at what was being suggested. I think it is a challenge given the number of vehicles that go around there and given the narrowness of the roadway to try to fit in both this, what I understood to be a center travel way and side little lanes for other bicycles or whatever. Also, if you look at the way the bicyclists behave when they're going around the corners, this is not a flat let's ride in the bike lane kind of situation. This is I'm going downhill, I'm going at some speed. So I think that there's some real challenges, but it's an interesting idea that the caller put out.
Right, and maybe if not for this area, somewhere else in the state where that solution might work.
Yes.
I live on our ridge, and I know sometimes I gasp because there are trees growing over toward the road, toward the street, and then you get the bus or these large vehicles that try and avoid getting hit or hitting these branches. And so they ride in the middle of the roadway, and you're coming up and you're like, you know, where do I go, right?
Right. And so a key component of what we've been recommending is vastly different vegetation management things, so that you once again create larger, wider, clear shoulders so that people can, you know, not crowd the center, so that they can not run into things on the side of the road, so that they're aware that there's stone embankments along much of the roadway. So there's a whole bunch of stuff like that that's going to take some concerted effort. It's been done in the past. So this is not rocket science here. This is something that people can do if they put the resources towards it.
We have an email from Edward, and he raises a question about commercial bicycling operations. You know, we talked about earlier. He writes, these operations are very dangerous for all motorists on Tantalus Roundtop. He's heard very little about this. The bicyclists are usually novices. The vans which take them block the road, and the cyclists speed down the road. Very dangerous.
Well, having encountered that bicycle tour,
yes,
perhaps 200-300 times, the vans that accompany them are very respectful of the community. They do everything they can to try to get people to get off the side, get off to the side, stop them, allow traffic to pass. But it is, again, inherently a problem when you have 30 or 40 people riding their bicycles down the hill, and probably all of them have differing levels of competence on a bicycle. And so it's going to present an issue. I mean, it does, but it has not been our worst issue on the mountain. Certainly, vegetation management in terms of its impact on sight lines. One of the things that occurs that causes the drifting to become so dangerous, the skateboarding to be so dangerous, bicycling to be so dangerous, is the absence of clear sight lines, because you are dropping down a steep hill. Very many, very, severe corners. And if you can see through those corners, you can see people, runners are coming up. You can see that runners are coming up. You can see that bicyclists are coming up or bicyclists are coming down. And as a runner or pedestrian, protect yourself, because that's an essential part of safety on Tantalus, is you have to protect yourself at all times, and the way you do that is with your eyes and your ears. And if you have no sight lines, and you have people riding bikes with their headphones on listening to loud music, you have elements that can create, a tragic event. And our only pedestrian death on Tantalus was someone who was killed by a bicycle, not a car, not a motorcycle, not a drifter or a racer, but just a regular old bicycle.
And I did hear a story about a cyclist who was coming down and actually hit a chicken and ended up, seriously injured. I mean, you've got feral chickens up there. You've got all kinds of things.
We do.
And Landon, talk about, the vegetation, I guess, because you've got all kinds of grasses and all kinds of things up there on those corners.
Oh, yes. Guinea grass is a problem pretty much everywhere, but Tantalus with the sight lines, it is. And, as described in the plan, pretty well outlines what should be done as far as an initial tag for some remedial things, but guinea grass just needs to be maintained constantly. One of the things that comes up always is, we would love to have staff out there to be trimming this, but there's 39,000 acres of forest reserves on Oahu. We have a handful of staff. We would love to engage with the community. That's why the community has been so great, is actually doing a lot of this maintenance. And the city and county, which really is a big part of the plan too, is clarifying jurisdiction. It's like, is it the road, city and county, are they responsible for that vegetation maintenance? Or is it, the forest reserve issue? So, Perry, maybe you can talk a little bit about...
Yeah, in vegetation, I mean, vegetation, especially on a place like Tantalus, where you have lots of rainfall, lots of sunshine, is just a challenge, and it's expensive to do. The nice thing about it is the more of it you do, the easier it gets. If you stay on top of stuff, in the long run, it's easier than if you try always to play catch-up. If you're always trying to pick up the tree that fell down because you let it grow over the roadway too long. If you let grass go too long without trimming it, then species get established, which are much more aggressive and much harder to keep under control from a safety perspective than if you really do regular maintenance. And so you can look at pictures of the roadway from the 50s when there was pretty regular roadside maintenance and look at what's growing there at that time and look what's there now, and it's quite different. And that has, it's not just a shorter thing that you see back then, it's a different species, and it's a different species because it was maintained regularly. So we're trying to get people to go back in that direction, but again, it takes the resources. People have to sort of dedicate themselves to doing that and realize that in the long term, that is the better way to go. And it's the same thing with sort of the road maintenance kinds of things. And so, for example, we talk about embankment maintenance, and there are places where people are going to need to do some work pretty soon, or there's going to be the same kind of problem that was experienced lower down on the mountain earlier. Something's going to fail catastrophically, and then you don't have the use of it for a long time. And there's also the threat of people being hurt when that happens. So we're trying to do that. And then there's just some fundamental rebuilding of the roadway, which is now 100 years old, that have to be done.
And then how do we tackle this? Carol Fukunaga talked about, you know, hotspots and maybe, you know, the priority list.
Yeah, we've identified places where the engineers that we've used in developing the plan say, you know, there's a problem. In some places we have a pretty good sense of what the problem is and therefore of what needs to be done to correct it. In other places, there's much more work that would need to be done to perfectly identify it and therefore come up with a known fix. But we've tried to sort of put it in the ballpark, say, this is, you ought to pay attention to these locations. And often the first step will be to do a really in-depth engineering study of that and come up with a solution. That's what's been happening at the Hogsback, that narrow one-lane place where there have been plans going on for a long time. They have not yet come to fruition. But so there's some areas where that needs to happen, and both on the sort of the downhill side where you can see things are going to give way, perhaps, at some point, or on the uphill side where there's some embankment slumping that if you take care of it now, it's going to be an easier task problem to solve than if you wait until there's a failure.
No, Mark, talk about this project, because really I'm hearing that the community just felt they had to step up and say something.
Well, we did. I mean, you know, we feel on the community much like we're sort of on our own. And that's not a bad thing or a complaint. It's just the reality of the separation between a place like Tantalus and a, you know, very urban environment, especially like now what we see in Kaka'ako. So we don't mind that we're, you know, on our own, but as the city and the state want to encourage other people to use it, then we need to work on it together to enable everybody to use it. And part of the plan looks at combining city, state, and residents to try to work this way. Perhaps, when the legislature comes next year, we can talk about pilot projects where the city agrees to use its resources to build out parking lots where parking goes on right now. The state agrees to do all the heavy lifting on the vegetation management there, at least initially. And then the community comes in with perhaps maintenance of the vegetation on a more regular basis, because you can get people to adopt corners and to work on areas if you get them cleared to start with. But if you ask the community to come in and start by buying $50,000 worth of equipment so that they can work on something, you know, you never really get it done. So if that kind of pilot project works, then you can take it to other places in the state. There are ways to deal with dumping by using technology to put security cameras in, changing the laws so that if a vehicle is involved in dumping, that vehicle gets a very, very stiff ticket, maybe $2,500. And this, you know, you can sort of take the burden away from the court system of trying to have to prove who it was who was actually dumping those 40 tires. And the 40 tires actually did happen within the last 90 days.
Oh, really? Up there on your hill?
Oh, yes. Tires are dumped because it's expensive to dump them legally. So people dump them, you know, illegally.
Yeah, I think that's the whole thing is, is what's happening at Tantalus. Can we use that as a model for other communities across the state on different islands?
I believe that's true, because we always want everybody to do everything for us, such as the caller wanted, you know, what are we going to do about speeding? Well, policing, yeah, sure, you know, put enough police up there and the speeding will go away, okay? But we don't have enough money for all of those police. So we got to figure out ways to use technology to work together to try to be able to afford what we want. And Tantalus is not the only place I think of on this island. I think of Pupukea. I think of other areas where they have large, you know, very, you know, agriculturally based communities and not much in the way of police protection or otherwise. You have to deal with how do you manage that area. And I think technology is something we're going to have to get comfortable with, and security cameras are something we're going to have to get comfortable with.
Right, yeah. And I know sometimes that remoteness of that area does draw and attract a criminal element. We often hear sometimes of bodies being dumped over there, or and I don't know what the homeless situation is up on the hill.
Well,
do
it's
people
more,
campers in your
yeah,
campers
well,
in the car?
campers and cars. More is more that they've been actually they're there, and yet they've been really for the most part quite good in that we don't see huge piles of garbage. You know, mm-hmm. But you do see the same car parked in the same place for 40 days in a row, and you go, I don't think, you know, because the car's not there all day. It's
right.
Just comes at 10 o'clock at night and leaves at 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So you have that, but it is a model. It's something that every part of this state has some area that has some of the issues we have. If we can use this, work on this, and develop systems for dealing with it, I think it's beneficial to the entire state.
Okay, we have a call on the line. Kevin from Hawaii Kai. Hi, you're on the air?
I'm on the air, and
yes.
You're Catherine.
Yes. What's on your mind?
Actually, I'm a landscape contractor, and I've done work for quite a few of the homes along the road, and actually growing up in Hawaii, I've kind of transitioned from maybe driving a little faster there to puttering along below the speed limit. So there's a lot of different people using it. What I've found, some of my clients are very conscientious and spend a lot of time and energy maintaining the, you might say, the no man's land. And it's frustrating, you know, where people will dump cars, tires, green waste, and a variety of other things. And one of the things I'd always tried to get the city to do is at least give us a couple more green cans so that when we do the regular maintenance, owner wasn't absorbing the hauling fees or the dump fees, you know, where we could at least just charge them for labor and then, you know, pop things in the green cans.
All right.
We don't have exactly that situation, but one of the things that does occur up on Tantalus is that it can be a long way between trash cans on the side of the road or at pullouts. And I know that when we go walking up there, we'll pick stuff up, but I've had to walk half a mile to find the next trash can. Having them present, having them attractive, having them well-maintained, which means emptied, and having them solid enough so somebody doesn't get enjoyment out of blasting them with their car off of the mountainside is really important. If that's done, and it's done really consistently, then I think people get in the habit of doing the right thing. And one of the ideas is to get people in the habit of doing the right thing up there. And I think there's a feedback loop there, and we're hoping to encourage it so that there's more and more positive behavior on the mountain.
Okay, and the whole idea, though, with this plan is you've got, we're in the middle of a comment period, right? So the public is being encouraged to come to this meeting tomorrow night or email or send in your comments about this plan. And this plan's really like a couple hundred pages long.
Oh, yes.
So we would encourage folks to go online and take a look at that. Anything else? You've got about two more minutes left. Anything you want to underscore?
The only thing I would say is that, you know, if all you have to say is that, you know, a place like Tantalus in town is really important, that's a good thing to say, because we've identified a bunch of things that can be done they take money, they take resources, they take personnel, and there are lots of competing interests. This one needs to be high up enough on the list to get the attention that it's going to take. And I've said this earlier, it's you can pay me now, you can pay me later. This mountain will get to you if you don't take care of it. And you better do it now. You'll get more enjoyment and less cost.
Okay, one final thought, Mark?
Demonstrate that you care by coming out to the meeting and by supporting the planning.
Okay, and then Landon, where do people need to go tomorrow?
They need to go down to the Kalani Moku Building, Department of Land and Natural Resources on Punchbowl Street, and it's the boardroom, and it's 5:30 to 7:30. And please check out the project website, tantalus-roundtopcorridor.com. It has an interactive GIS interface that you can provide comments on and download the plan and find out other information.
Okay, maybe it can be a model for the rest of the state. Let's hope, right? We can only hope. All right. Well, we would like to thank our guests, Perry White of Planning Solutions, Mark Bernstein, president of the Tantalus Community Association, and Landon Johnson with DLNR's Division of Forestry and Wildlife. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining in on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air, contact the TalkBack line, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.